Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Russell Miles, 19 years of career experience, a floating lieutenant with Montgomery County Fire Rescue, and creator of one of the Smoke Clears podcasts. Russell had an uncle who served with the FDNY, and on top of that, he has always been into anything related to fire trucks. So upon moving back into Maryland, he would often visit and ride with members of Chillum Adelphi Volunteer Fire Department, Company 34 in PG County. From there, he turned to the cadet program in PG, obtained all his certifications, and began applying to career departments when Montgomery called and gave him his shot. Russell is a very humble lieutenant that remembers it's more about just pointing and giving commands. Russell is going to get in the trenches and be the first to perform whatever skill or task is needed. One of his biggest pet peeves is learning to control the things we can control. With that, I present Mr. Russell Miles.
My name is Russell Miles. I work for Montgomery County Fire and Rescue, been on the job for about 19 years. And the way I got into the fire service was from my uncle. He was a member of the FDNY for almost 35 years. And he lived up in New York for pretty much his whole life. And as a kid, we would go up to be with him and my grandparents. And he would always come over to my grandparents' house and he would tell stories about his time in the fire service and the things that he did. And I always thought they were kind of cool, but it never sparked in me a huge desire to be in the fire department. I just thought, oh, yeah, that's cool. My uncle's a fireman. That's nice. So skip ahead. Many years later, I finished college and I joined an AmeriCorps program out on the West Coast in California. And we did a whole bunch of different community service projects, but our last project was wildland firefighting. And so it was about a team of about 12 of us. And we joined up with one of the wildland fire companies out there. And for a couple months, we got to be wildland firefighters. And so they trained us in all the tactics and everything that they do. And we never got to fight like one of the really huge big fires that you see on the news that consumes hundreds of acres, but we got a chance to fight a couple small ones, and that was enough for me to be like, man, this is amazing. Because I knew coming out of college, I got my degree in sociology, but I knew the last thing I wanted to do was spend my career behind a desk somewhere. That's just not for me. And so firefighting was, I mean, it was fun, it was physical, it was dangerous. There was emphasis on working out and being fit and in shape, and just all that stuff appealed to me. The only thing about wildland firefighting that didn't appeal to me was I'm not a huge outdoorsy kind of guy. Mm-hmm. I've never been a big camper or anything like that. So I thought, well, I like the firefighting. I just don't like being out in the woods all the time. So I thought, all right, well, let me check out the structural firefight and see what that's all about. So I moved back to Maryland, and I was living with my parents when I came back, and they lived in Prince George's County. And I know you're a fan of the PG Fire Department. And so we lived in the Chillum Adelphi area of mm-hmm. Prince George's County, and their firehouse was maybe like a 20-minute walk from my house. So I walked up there and introduced myself and just started going up there and hanging out. And the guys were really cool. They let me hang out. They let me ride on the trucks with them to go to calls. And that was my real introduction to the structural firefighting world. And the Chillum Adelphi Station, Company 34, is very busy. And so got to see a lot. And eventually I went through the whole Prince George's Fire Department volunteer recruit school and got sworn in as a member up there. And I remember going to my very first fire there. So occasionally I would spend the night over at the firehouse. And in the middle of the night, I remember the red phone rang and it was communications calling the firehouse directly, telling us that we had a first due fire. And one of the career guys shouted at, "First do fire, let's go." And so we all jump on a fire truck and we go down the road and we get to this house. And sure enough, the basement was on fire. And even though I was a member, I hadn't gone through Firefighter One or Essentials yet. So I couldn't go in, but I still had on all my gear and was standing there at the front door, just humping hose into the front door. And I was like, yeah, this is it. This is what I wanted to do. And funny enough, after we cleaned up and came back and I went back to my house, I should say I had been applying to different fire departments prior to that. I had applied to Montgomery County, to Prince George's County, to some departments in Virginia. I applied to actually a Seattle fire department because when I was in AmeriCorps, we spent some time in Seattle and I really liked the city and I thought, hey, maybe I'll end up here. But so that same day when I came back home, I got the letter in the mail from Montgomery County saying that they wanted to hire me. And so I accepted and got into the fire service there. And yeah, then my career just took off from there. And that was 19 years ago. And now I'm a lieutenant in Montgomery County Fire and Rescue.
Okay. With you having an uncle in the fire service, did you ever think to yourself, hey, like, why not FDNY? Or no, it just wasn't in the cards?
I think I thought about it a few times, but I really didn't have any desire to live in New York.
Good for you. Good for you, pal.
Yeah. As much as I loved visiting New York, I loved exactly that. I loved to visit New York. So it's just, I know a lot of New Yorkers, hey, if you're listening to this, no offense. I know that New Yorkers think New York is the best. And I think New York is great, but it just wasn't for me to want to live there.
No, I get you. And I'm just picking with you because I'm from New York, so I could definitely joke about it. I don't blame you at all, dude. Like, I got friends that are still up there, and I'm like, how are y'all still surviving? Like, New York is, it's a different breed. Like you said, it's awesome to visit, but to live, I'm out. But yeah, so exactly. I get it. You know, New York wasn't your cup of tea. That's cool. So you apply for several different departments and Montgomery is the one that called you and you're like, all right, sold, let's do it. So upon accepting, did you have to go through some sort of recruit class?
Yep. They had a, what is it, about 20 week or so recruit school. And they taught us, you know, everything from Firefighter One, Firefighter Two. We had to go through EMT. We all came out as EMT basics and a whole bunch of little other trainings like hazmat, some other ones that I'm probably forgetting right now. I think there was some safety and survival in there. Yeah. So it took, all in all, took about 20 weeks or so. And then they cut us loose and we all got assigned to different stations and we had to finish up our probationary time there.
Okay. And upon completion, where was your first assignment and what was it like knowing that you are officially a career firefighter stepping through the doors of the firehouse? So, you know, talk about that.
Yeah. So my first assignment was Company 11, Glen Echo, which for anyone who's not familiar with Montgomery County is one of the counties that borders Washington, D.C. And Company 11 was near Massachusetts Avenue. Massachusetts Avenue goes right into D.C. So Company 11 borders D.C. And you would think, okay, well, then we'll see some action, maybe some mutual aid action in D.C. No, there was none of that. So Company 11 is actually one of the slower firehouses in the county. And I really didn't know much about Montgomery County at all. Prior to getting hired, like I knew a little bit from what some of the guys at Company 34 just talked about Montgomery, and I know that part of Prince George's County ran mutual aid with parts of Montgomery, so I knew a little bit about it. But Company 11, I didn't know anything about. So I came in just wide eyed and ready to be a firefighter, and just little did I know, like it just was not a aggressive, like fast paced place. Like it was like people probably heard the term like retirement homes for firehouses. Like this was definitely Company 11 is definitely that. Like it's a slow company. Engine maybe may run one or two calls a day. There's an ambulance there. An ambulance runs more than that, but it was not a fast-paced firehouse at all.
Okay. And you mentioned this and brought it up, and I want to say, I want to preface before I state this, like, there's no shade on slow companies, because reality, at least from my perspective, you know, with my department, we have stations that don't see a lot of action, don't run a lot of calls. And so when you get a new individual that is like into it, gung ho, it can be a soul crusher, you know what I mean? Like, when you're hearing other companies run calls and you may run a call or two, or sometimes if you don't, like, so can you explain and provide some advice to like anybody that's on a department or a station that doesn't run as much as they would like? Like, how do you keep that motivation, that fire going?
Sure. So if you are younger on the job and you want to be running the calls, you want to see the action, quote unquote, but you're just not there, like your current assignment just isn't that. You've got to surround yourself with people who are about that. And if those are people at that station, great. If it's not, maybe it's friends who work at another firehouse. Maybe in this day and age, I mean, you can connect virtually with people through social media, and people who are all about training, who post all kind of inspirational stuff like workouts and quotes and pictures of fires, videos of fires, or just and the guys who are willing to engage with you on anything. Like you've got to stay connected to those types of people, and really just control the things you can control. You've got to motivate yourself to work on your skills. Like you've got to motivate yourself to work out and stay physically fit. And you've got to take the initiative to learn. And even if that means you're annoying the people on your crew, but if you're annoying them because you're just trying to get better and you want to learn, like I don't think anyone is going to turn you down for that or not help you out with that. I mean, if they do, shame on them because you're just trying to better yourself. But like you've got to find some way to surround yourself with people who are about the things that you're about.
No, and that's 100% facts. Yes. And to me too, the slower stations are, it's an advantage and a disadvantage, but the advantages are you can get your skills in, you can get your reps in, and it's my belief that when that station runs a possible structure, like, there's a good chance, 'cause it's always in those quiet areas. Yes, your heavy populated busy stations see work too, but in order to see work, they also got to juggle the amount of BS type calls that they have to go on. You know, you got to run a lot of med locals to get that fire, whereas the companies that are out in, you know, the boonies by themselves, the retirement homes, there's a good chance when they get something, it's usually pretty good that's coming out.
100%. And Montgomery County has that too. It's our company 14. They're way out there. I mean, like the next closest company to them may have a 15 or 20-minute response time. And that's within the county. And then like they border some other counties and other companies coming from out of county. And I mean, they're still probably looking at least 10, 15 minutes to come into their first due. But whenever they get a call, it's a call. If it's a fire, it's a working fire. If it's an EMS call, it's somebody who's dead, dying, or hurt. So yeah, that absolutely it's out there. And then I wanted to say too, yeah, that no shade to people who choose to work at slower houses, and people do that for all different types of reasons, and they're going to do what they're going to do. But I just know for a younger person getting into the job, wanting to really get into the job, it can be a challenge.
Yes, definitely, definitely. Okay. So how long were you there before you either decided to put in a bid to go somewhere else, or you know, what were your next steps?
Yeah, so I finished up my rookie time, which my whole rookie time there was about 6 months, and that was on our C shift, and then I got transferred to Station 11 B shift, and was there for maybe about another 6 months or so, And during that time, I was just kind of getting discouraged. And at one point, I thought, man, like this is not what I signed up to do. Maybe I should quit and join the DC Fire Department because they were hiring at the time. But all I really needed to do was just transfer to a busier firehouse. And so I ended up being able to transfer to our company 12, which is Hillendale, and they're in the Silver Spring part of the county, which also borders Prince George's County. And they are in our what we call the first battalion, and the whole first battalion is definitely has that aggressive mindset of wanting to go to fires, wanting to train, wanting to be first in to whatever fire call that they're in. And so I got the transfer to go to there, and I spent the next 7.5 years at that station.
Wow. Okay. So, talk a little bit about what that was like, because you mentioned as soon as you got there, the whole mindset of that battalion was aggressive firefighting. They want to go to jobs. So how important is finding those individuals? Because like the fire service man, it's I always kind of equate to it. It's kind of like high school. You got to find the people that you connect with, that you jive with. And so how important is it for others to find those individuals that they can kind of emulate positively?
Yeah, it's extremely important because, I mean, we as people, we are meant to be in groups. We're meant to be in community. And the people that we surround ourselves with are usually the people that we end up being like. And if you are coming into the job with a desire of, hey, I want to be the best firefighter I can be. Yeah, I want to be good at my skills. I want to be ready. So whenever that call comes, like I'm there as an asset to help however I can help, you want to surround yourself with people who are like that. And so getting to work down at Company 12, it was exactly that for me. So we Company 12 had an engine, a ladder truck, a tiller truck, a regular BLS ambulance, and an ALS ambulance. So we call them medic units. And with Montgomery County, we staff firehouses. Like we don't staff apparatus. So there'll be, there could be whatever, 11, 12 guys assigned to the firehouse. And there'll be, at the time, it was three people on the engine company, three people on the ladder truck, and two people on the ambulance, two people on the medic unit. And you, by and large, you rotate. And when you're a younger guy in our department on the job, younger guy or girl, you're going to spend a lot of time riding the ambulance. You're going to spend a lot of time riding the medic unit or driving the medic unit. And I mean, that's just how it is. So I did that. I spent a lot of time on the ambulance and running calls there. And of course, I'd get my time on the fire trucks too. And I tried to make the best of it and learn what I can. And sometimes the guys would do, be doing trainings, but it was my day on the ambulance. And the ambulances in Montgomery County, especially in the first battalion, are very busy. So I may have missed out on some of those trainings, but I just did my best to soak up what I could from there. I tried to stay up on my fitness because I remember the one lieutenant who was there. And one captain who was there, like they were big on physical fitness. So we would work out a lot. Guys on the shift would work out a lot. Not all of them, but like we said, you find the people who are going to be your people. And so we would work out. We were doing workouts in gear back then, in gear, out of gear, and it was great. It was a great time of just learning and trying to grow and trying to be that firefighter that I always wanted to be.
Okay. And at what point did you decide to yourself, I think I'm ready to promote or go to the next step?
Yeah. So I had gotten checked off to drive the tiller truck. And that was really cool because that was something I always wanted to do. I always loved tiller trucks. And so I got to get checked off to drive it and get checked off to be in the back, driving the back end. Unfortunately, at that time, the county was going through some budget issues. And that truck was scheduled to go out of service on July 1st of that year, like permanently. And so they told me, hey, look, you have until July 1st to get checked off on the truck. And so I worked to do that. And I did, and I ran my last call to get checked off on June 30th. So the next day, the very next day, the truck was out of service. And it had gone out of service before, maybe a couple years ago, and then it came back. And so I thought, okay, well, maybe it'll come back again. And so I just kind of still hung out at the station and was working there. But then I kind of saw the writing on the wall, like, hey, it's not coming back. And at this time, I had also gotten checked off to drive the fire engine, and so I would get to do that here and there because the primary driver of the fire engine, the we call them master firefighters, he was injured, and so all of the firefighters who were checked off to drive, like we just rotated through getting a chance to drive. So I got a chance to drive a bunch, and that was great. But then I had been on at that station for maybe like 6-ish years at that point, and I just felt like it was time for something different. I wanted a new challenge, a different challenge, and I didn't just want to indiscriminately transfer to another firehouse. I thought, well, if I want to go to another firehouse, I want to go as the master firefighter, and I want to be the primary driver of whatever fire trucks are there. So I started studying for the master's test, and took the master's test when it came around, and did pretty well. And then I ended up getting promoted.
Okay. And where did you get promoted to?
I got promoted to our company 28, which is in the Gaithersburg area, which is another very busy area of Montgomery County. And the main firehouse in Gaithersburg is Company 8. But Company 28 is just a few miles away from it. And 28 is also one of the hazmat stations that we have. And I had no desire to do hazmat. Zero, zero desire. But one of my lieutenants who worked at Company 12, he had ended up promoting to captain, and he was the captain at Station 28 on C shift. And one of the master firefighter openings was on his shift. And so I called him up and said, hey man, you mind if I put in and be the master and come work for you? And he said, yeah, put in, come on down. Love to have you. And I did. And because nobody else apparently wanted to do hazmat either, so I don't think I had any competition for that spot. But I got it, and I ended up spending the next 9 years working there as the
Wow.
master firefighter.
Wow. Okay. All right. I laugh because I too was a I call myself a has been. I got certified in it. I went to classes for it. I learned a lot of different things. Hazmat, it's an acquired taste, if you would say, for others. A lot of neat stuff, a lot of crazy products out there that you, especially like for us, we have 77 is our main corridor. Man, like what's in these shipping containers will boggle the mind sometimes. And if you have rail yards, what goes through your rail yards, man, like there's a lot of potential for some bad stuff out there. So I totally understand you, and I get it, man. I get it.
Yeah, 100%. And we have a lot of the same things in Montgomery County. We've got a couple major highways that run through the county. There's a lot of biotech corporations that have their headquarters here in Montgomery County, and there's a few train lines that go through the county. And yeah, there's all kinds of crazy stuff that comes through every day.
Right.
So yeah, there's hazmat has a ton of potential. But yeah, how often are you running like the type of calls you see on movies, where like where you're wearing the big
Right.
level A suits? You know, yeah, not that often,
Right.
but the potential is definitely there.
Definitely, definitely. And one thing I could say about hazmat that I didn't like, but I understand is if you really have a hazmat event or a situation, think it's a slow process. Like you have to gather all your data and, figure out what resources you need. Like it's not like Structure fire, it's go, go, go. You know what you got to do. Hazmat's completely different. And like I said, I'm not throwing shade to any hazmat individuals out there because we need those people. Those people that are into that, dialed in, 100% get it. But at the end of the day, it just wasn't my cup of tea. I felt like for me, we were concentrating more on that than the fire side. And if I had, the law of averages, we're gonna run more fire calls than hazmat calls per se. So I just was like, I felt like I was losing my skill on the fire side. And so that's why I bowed out, I transferred out. Granted, the company I'm on now, we are the backup to the backup hazmat, but at least I'm not like the main key player.
Yeah, oh, I can 100% relate to that too. Company 28 is pretty busy. The engine can average anywhere between 6 to 12 calls a day. Ambulance is about the same, if not more. And we cross-staff the hazmat unit. So guys from the engine company jump over to the hazmat if it gets a call. And it can be difficult, or at least a challenge, to maintain both sets of skills. You know, the fire skills, the hazmat skills, when you just got so much going on. And so yeah, I can relate to that 100%.
So what as I like to say, what tripped your breaker for you deciding, hey, I'm gonna try to promote again to a company officer?
Yeah. So during my time at 28, I think that was really a big step up for me. Like I jokingly say, kind of tongue in cheek, becoming a master firefighter was when I felt like I really joined the fire department, because now I'm spending all of my time on the fire truck. And of course, we're running EMS calls on the fire truck. Now that's everywhere, but I got to be the primary driver of our fire engine. I got to really drill down and know that piece well. 28 is busy. Like I said, within that first year of me being promoted, I went to more working fires than I had the whole almost 10 years of my career prior to that. And so it was awesome. It was great. So just finally getting to really put those fire skills to work. And master firefighters are often preceptors to the rookies that get assigned to our station. So I was doing that. I had a big handful of that along with everybody else on my shift. And I was helping to train the younger firefighters who wanted to be engine drivers. So I got to have a handful of that. And our whole shift was great. Like we all jumped in and pitched in and helped out, you know, wherever we could, as I'm sure a lot of places do. But just being the person that people look to, like to be the lead as like a preceptor for a rookie, or the preceptor for someone who wants to drive the fire truck, was definitely the push that I needed. It definitely helped me grow in a lot of areas. And me and my captain, like I mentioned before, like we would work out a lot heavy down to Station 12. We did the same thing at Station 28. Like we were always working out hard. We tried to get people from our shift to join us, and they did a lot of the times. And people knew, hey, if you're gonna work here at Station 28 on C shift, you're gonna get a good heavy workout. Like we are into fitness here. And it was great. Like it just helped push me to see, and the standard of being ready, like to be a very competent, physically ready, operationally ready firefighter, it should be high. And it just helped me to see what it looked like to maintain that standard and to help other people rise to meet that standard. And it was great. And so I'd say about 4 years into my time there, I took the lieutenant's test for the first time. And I have 2 kids, and they were very small at the time. I think they were about 2 and 5. And my wife, she stays at home, but we didn't have a lot of help to help us take care of the kids on a daily basis. So when I was at home, like pretty much all my time was spent just trying to help raise the kids. So I didn't put in the time that I needed to be successful on that test.
Gotcha.
And so I didn't score as well as I would have liked to. And so I ended up taking the test again 2 years later, and I did better this time. Kids were older, so I had more time to study. Did better, almost got promoted, but died like number three on the list, something like
Oh,
that.
okay.
So it was almost there, but not quite. And then 2 years later, I took the test again and did much better this time. I was in the top five that time, and so I ended up getting promoted. And so just throughout that time, growing as a firefighter, but also just growing as a man, and knowing that I wanted to, I guess I was at that point in my life where I wanted to help raise up the next generation. I had close to, I guess, about 17 years on at the time, and I'm like, I've learned a lot, and I want to share that with up and coming firefighters. Like our department was hiring a lot. There was always new faces coming in, and I saw a lot of the older firefighters that I came up with retiring. And so it was humbling to be like, wow, like I'm one of those firefighters that guys are now looking up to. And even though I felt like I still had so many areas where I could grow and be better, the fact was that they were looking at me as like the older guy, quote unquote. And so I just wanted to be worthy of them looking up to me and coming to me for guidance, and knowing that, hey, I have guidance to give. Like, yes, I want to share it with you. I want to help you be the best that you can be. So all of that pushed me to want to promote.
Of the answer. And it's amazing how, like, I mean, it sounds like it from what you said, which is why I'm going to say what I'm going to say. But like, I feel like, like when I got into the fire service, I think we all go through that phase. You're in it, but you're young. You think you know it all. You're ruffling some feathers. You're doing things that aren't like terribly bad, but it's like, you should straighten up your act a little bit for the ones that are underneath of you, kind of looking at you being like the senior guy and whatnot. But it's truly amazing what finding a wife, getting married, like making that conscious decision to settle down, growing in age, maturing, and then once you have a child or two or three or four, whatever the case may be, man, when you have that little human being that you like, as men, we had a small part in making, because women do majority of the work. I'm always upfront about that. And you're holding your child. It's like, it's a lot. You know what I mean? It's like, all right, I have a job. I need to make sure I'm providing. As men, you want to be providers, and you want to be the I don't want to say breadwinner, but men want to be that guy. You want to be that person for your family. So it's amazing what all that does with your mindset. And then you add on top of what you do for a living, because it's like, all right, I can't be coward and reckless anymore, because I have people that like are expecting me to come home. And even if you're not married, I'm not saying like people don't expect you to come home, because you have parents and friends and family, but it ups the level when you have your own family.
Yes, 100%, 100%. I mean, that as you know, as a father, I mean, when those kids or your kids are asking you questions about life, that stuff that we've taken for granted for years, but they just don't know, because I mean, they're only however old they are. It's humbling to know that, wow, like I'm actively shaping this young person's life. I am contributing to who they are going to be as a person, for good or for bad. And being getting promoted was very much like that. Like, obviously we're all adults in the fire department, and people can choose to do what they want, but the younger firefighters, they look up to the older firefighters, and they are paying attention, just like kids see everything, they hear everything.
Yes.
And the younger firefighters, they see and they hear everything. Like, when you're setting a good example, when you're not setting a good example, when you're being positive, when you're being negative, they hear and they see all of that. And some of them will take it in, and they'll internalize the good stuff, and maybe they might even internalize the bad stuff. But yeah, it just showed me the power of my example.
Right.
And so I knew I wanted to provide a good example, and I knew that I could provide a good example. And like I said, I still knew I had much to learn, much to grow in, but still, like I'm at the age where I want to help shape the up and coming generation, however I can, and whatever way I can serve them, I want to do that.
Understood. Understood. So you are a company officer now. What does leadership mean to you, and what kind of leader did you want to set for yourself? Because, we learn from the good ones and the bad ones. So, like, upon you seeing, all right, you got that lieutenant badge on you. So in what ways did you want to affect, like, change, I guess?
So, yes, I saw during my time coming up, I saw a lot of good, I saw a lot of bad. And I said, yeah, I want to be one of the good ones. And I knew that for me, like it started with myself, the example that I set. I knew I wanted to be in shape. I wanted to be competent in my skills, and I wanted to be humble where I, if there was an area that I didn't know something, I didn't want to try to lie or try to fake because firefighters to smell that coming a mile away. And a lot of them, especially those that have been on the job, like they kind of already know who you are, and they're looking to see if, all right, well, now that he's got those bugles on, is he going to change? Like, is he going to be, think more than he thinks of himself, or is he going to be humble and a good leader? And I didn't want it to be someone that I wasn't. Slight sidebar. So my wife and I were part of a very controlling, manipulative church for a long time, for about 20 years, and we got out at about 2020. And we learned that, like, never again will we let people push us or control us or manipulate us to be someone who we don't want to be, or someone that is not who we choose to be. And I took that mindset into the fire department. It's like I'm not going to try to push someone to be someone that isn't going to be the example that I set first. Like if I want you to hold a certain standard, for sure, I need to hold that standard first. And so, if I was going to tell guys and girls under me to work out, well, then let me be the first one working out. If I want them to train, well, then I'm putting my gear on and we're training too. Like I'm gonna be right there with you. And I knew, so I'm a what's called a float officer, a float lieutenant, and that means for our department, we don't have an assigned station that we always work at, that I work wherever there's an officer vacancy for that day. So I'm constantly working at different firehouses throughout the county, in places that I'm not familiar with people that I'm not familiar with. And so there's a lot that I don't know. And so I tell those guys, hey, look, I don't know this area. Like, can we go out and look at a building, or can we go out and show me what this first do is all about? Or if there's things that they want to do, like I'm all for that, because I'm not going to pretend that I know when I don't know. Especially because there's just so much at stake being the officer. Like it's not the time to try to fake people and try to be someone who you're not. We're all here to work together, and we all have our roles. And so a lot of times as the officer, I'm relying heavily on whoever is driving me that day. And like if they know the area, like that's a huge weight off of me, because I don't know the area. I may have worked here a handful of times, but I don't know the ins and outs of the area that they do. So I just wanted to be upfront about all of that. And I think the people that I've worked with have appreciated that, that I'm there with them if we're training, that I'm there with them doing workouts. And sometimes they don't want to work out with me, and I'm totally fine with that. If they have their own program they're doing, they're working out, that's fine. They don't have to do exactly what I'm doing. But I don't want to ever call someone to do something that I'm not willing to do. So that really that really guided me in terms of, hey, this is the kind of leader I want to be. I want to serve them, whatever they need, whatever they want to work on, whatever, however they want to grow in, I want to be there to help facilitate that. And I want to be an asset. I know a lot of guys that I think we follow mutually on the Instagram social media space that say have that saying, you know, be an asset, not a liability. And I wanted to be that like from the beginning. Like I don't ever want people to check the telestaff roster of who's working somewhere that day and see my name and be like, oh, here we go. You know, good luck to us. I want them to see my name and like, okay, we're gonna have a good day today. And so that always drove me to just be the best kind of leader that I can be.
And I love the message because we need more individuals out there, especially more officers out there that are humble enough to, like you said, and I get it. Like, I think having a floating position is really good for new lieutenants like yourself because it gets you uncomfortable and it gets you comfortable, hopefully being uncomfortable where, you know, you don't know this particular crew, you don't know this area, but you come in. You have the mindset, hey guys, listen, I'm not trying to change anything that you're doing. I'm here as an officer, like, but there are certain things I'd like to do, and hopefully the crew is receptive on that and on board. I love the fact that you mentioned, you know, like you're the first one to set the example, whether it's training or working out, because it's very easy for company officers to direct orders and just stand back and watch. Where I think if you are going to do that, I think it's best practice and it's great for your members, especially your newer members, to see, oh, damn, the officer's going first. And let's just say you don't get it right the first time. And, you know, they can learn from that, like, oh, okay, like he made a mistake. Like it's going to happen. You want to do it in training, of course. But I think that there is a lot to say where if you have someone that's going to actually do as they say, you know what I mean? Not just do because I said so, but I'm gonna do it and I'm gonna show you that I do it. I think that's very important.
Yes. And in all fairness, there have been times where I'm doing drills with whatever crew that I'm with, and I'll have the guys and girls on the ambulance or the EMS unit go first, just because it's a lot more likely that they're going to run a call than we will, and I at least want them to get the reps in. But that's not because like I'm not willing to do it. It's just I want them to have every opportunity to get the training in. And so if that means I go last, okay, well then I'll go last, but I'm more than willing to go first, but I don't want to take that opportunity from them just in case they get a call.
No, definitely. Definitely. I get it. I get it. And with your ambulances, are they allowed to, like, I'm assuming whenever you have a like a working structure fire, you have an ambulance or ambulances on scene. Are they allowed to partake in firefight activity or do they have to stay in the role of you know, patient care for firefighters or civilians?
Yeah, so they can, but it's preferred that they stay ready to deal with any firefighter or civilian that needs EMS help. But like for example, whenever there's a working fire and there's nobody that's confirmed trapped, we always have to designate who's going to be our two out. And our policies say that an EMS crew can be used as the two out, but it's not preferred. So I guess to answer your question, yes, they can participate in firefighting stuff, but it's not looked at as that's the first thing that they're going to do.
Understood.
Now, of course, there's always exceptions to that. Like I said, the Company 14 who's way out there in the sticks, like they may need to have them engage right away because they need the hands because the next set of hands are 15, 20 minutes out. But yeah, but by and large, like, yes, they can participate, but they shouldn't be the first ones to do it.
Okay, understood. Understood. You also mentioned physical fitness, man, being an important role. I think to me that is very important, if not numero uno on the list, like physical fitness, and then for me it's training, and then it's, you know, being respectful for others. Like there's a list, but leaders are, I'm sorry, but physical fitness and then training to me goes hand in hand. But How important is that to you, and why?
So it's very important to me. At the foundation of what we do, we use our bodies to accomplish the tasks of helping people. And you can't fight fire remotely. We can't do it via Zoom. We just can't. And so you have to be there. Your body has to be ready, and it has to be ready for whatever can come. There's a captain who does the whole Mayday mindset thing. Rob Ramirez works down in Florida. He has a saying that I just heard recently that I love, and I'll modify it a little bit. It says, "Stuff that never happens happens all the time," and that perfectly encompasses the fire service for me, where whether it's your own department or it's some other department you read about, you just read about some crazy call that some crew had to deal with. And the foundation of that is you need to be physically prepared to handle whatever can come with that call. And maybe the call will require something that's way above any one person's physical abilities, but still, if you are able to help mitigate that call or be an asset on that call because you're physically ready, I mean that should be the ground floor of being ready as a firefighter. That's basic stuff, like my old captain used to say, how many of us would hire a painter that couldn't paint? How
That's
many of us
right.
would hire a plumber who doesn't know how to use his tools?
Right.
How many of us would want someone to fix our computer that doesn't know computers? And so for firefighting, you have to be ready to use the tools. You have to be ready to move the patients. You have to be ready to do whatever that call demands. And the physical fitness is the first step for that. So I think that the standard of being physically ready, it should be a high standard. Obviously, it should be fair standard. It shouldn't favor one person or one gender over another, but it needs to be fair. And if you can't meet it, then maybe this isn't the job for you.
100%. I have to agree, and I don't get how, the fire service is great on this on the aspect of we have SOPs and SOGs for this, that if we encounter this, then do this. If not, then do that. You know what I mean? But when it comes to being honest and truthful with ourselves, and it comes to physical fitness, when we have an individual or individuals within our organization that aren't quite there, no fault of their own, because as I always say, man, life happens. You don't know what's going on in people's lives, and I 100% agree with that. But if we see a problem before it gets to a much bigger problem, we should go, all right, hold on, let's check in. Hey, such and such person, one on one, not in front of everybody, of course, behind closed doors, like, hey, how are you? I'm genuinely checking in to see what's going on. And then if they go on whatever path they do, it's like, all right, well, I've noticed that, you haven't been as active as you should be. But it's like we can't, it's like, to me, either society or depending on your human resources, if they are like really engaged within your department, it's like, well, no, that's a topic you can't discuss with that individual. Why not? Because our job revolves around that. Because I look at it as if you have an individual who's not quite up to the physical fitness portion of it, they're going to be a liability, which is now like, okay, now instead of dealing with this, you have to deal with this and then that, or you have to get another crew. Like, it's a domino effect. And I understand human rights, what do you call the like you can't divulge people's information. I get that. But when it comes to what we do, hopefully fire chiefs and fire organizations take a stand like, hey, I understand, this may in your world seem like, hey, we can't talk about it, but we don't do what you guys do. We don't sit in desks and in cubicles and push paperwork. We are out here, like you perfectly stated, using our bodies. So in order to use our bodies correctly, we have to be physically fit. And I don't want people to get that word misconstrued. We're not saying you got to be, Arnold Schwarzenegger type, body type structure. But man, you got to get out, you got to do cardio, you got to sweat, and hopefully we are holding physical fitness standards yearly, not just, all right, you're hired, all right, you're good to go, you'll do a couple JPRs quarterly, blah blah blah, and then we're done. Like, I just don't get that.
Yeah, man. Agreed. 100% agreed. And I think that, and this goes along with leadership too, is that if a firefighter is not meeting that physical standard, like, yeah, like you might have some friendly fire department busting on that person for it, but at the end of the day, the officer or that crew should be like, hey, what can we do to help you to meet this standard? Like, we are here for you. Like, we're here to give you whatever you need. Like, do you need someone to work out with you? Do you need someone to help you figure out the type of foods to eat? And whatever it is, like, we're here for you to help you do that. And I think when you have that kind of culture and that kind of environment, I mean, how could you not thrive? And it's unfortunate too that, hey, maybe some people might do their best to try to meet that standard. And if they still aren't meeting the standard for whatever reason, well, then okay, maybe you may need to have a difficult conversation with that person. It's like, all right, we've done all that we can do, and you're not meeting the standard. So I don't know if we can go further from here. But I mean, there's a lot that can happen way before a person ever gets to that point.
Yes, sir.
So yeah, we
Definitely.
should be all about helping people to meet the standard, but be unapologetic of having a high standard, because in the end, it's the citizens that suffer if we're not ready whenever they call for us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And another thing I want to say, it's 2024, about to be, by the time this episode released, it's going to be 2025. But with the technology that we have in our hands, and I get it, like, if you don't know something, but it's in your hands, like, you can Google, all right, different diets, different things to eat, different exercise programs. You don't have to pay for all this stuff. Like, there are some people out there that will give it to you for free, like, hey, this is what you have to do. But to me, minus that aside, it's up to the individual to make that conscious decision, like, okay, I have to do this, like, I have to stick with it, because like you just said, it's for us, but it's not only for us. It's for that citizen that's calling for help, that they need help right then and there. It's hopefully for your family too on that back end. Like, I want to be there when I want to go home. When I retire from this job, I want to at least have a life. You know what I mean? Like, God willingly, if that's in your script, because everybody has a script, is that's how my mind works. Everybody has a script. We all want to have that beautiful ending, but sometimes it's just not in the cards. But at least for me, I will control what I can control. And if I can control my diet, my fitness, just moving, I mean, I'm getting older, my body's hurting. I'm not like that old, but I'm no spring chicken either. And I've seen that, because I remember I used to make fun of my dad all the time. Like, he would get up and his knees would crack. And I'm like, oh my God, your knees are cracking. He's like, okay, you think you'll be young forever? And I see it. I get up, my back hurts. I'm like, damn, like, this sucks. Getting old sucks. Older sucks, but you can't let that be an excuse, because it's just that. It's an excuse.
And there are, like you said, there's tons of resources out there, from workout plans to diet plans to stretching and mobility plans to any other plan to meet whatever needs you have. Like, it's all there. And if you can't find it, there's plenty of people that can help you find it, or they'll give it to you for free, like you said. And yeah, like I think we're probably about the same age. Like, I'm in my early 40s, and yeah, stuff is starting to hurt more, and I don't recover as quickly as I did from certain workouts, and the things that I eat, like I there's some things I can't eat as well anymore, or my body just doesn't process as well anymore, and that's the realities of aging. But there's all things we can do to kind of hold that stuff at bay. And it's all stuff that we can control, and you can control what you can control. I mean, there's so much in this job that we can't control, but there's a lot that we can.
Absolutely.
And if people emphasize the things that they can control, don't let themselves get distracted by, whatever, social media or whatever the thing is on TV or in life that can be distracting. And I know that can be easier said than done, because life sometimes is life, and it can pull you in all kinds of different directions. But again, that's why we have to be there for each other, like, to help out as much as we can.
No, you're 100% right. And that leads us to our next topic, something you wanted to hit on, controlling the things we can control. Like you said, easier said than done. I have my days where I try to like woo-saw, not worry about it, but you hear it. Firehouse, you shift change. Hey, did you hear this? Did you hear that? This new rule, this whatever coming out, blah, 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 gets you all worked up. But at the end of the day, it's like, don't let it ruin your day. You know what I'm saying? Like, especially it, like you said, easier said than done. The news, everything, I feel like everything, like, depending on what you watch or what you surround yourself, will either charge you in the wrong way or in the right way. When it comes to which I'm not a big on it, but it's a topic like politics. You know what I mean? Like that can go real good or real bad. And then you have individuals that will let it like ruin the rest of their day. And it's like at the end of the, does it affect you? Yeah, it affects all of us in a certain way, but does it affect you directly? Does that topic, whatever the topic may be, does it affect your home life? Your relationship with your wife and kids? No, let it go. Let it go. And so I'm gonna let you have the floor on it because I know you said you wanted to hit on that.
So ever since becoming an officer, like, that whole phrase, control what you can control, has meant so much to me. And I'll get to that, but let me come back to when I first got on the job. So when I was first at Station 11, like I said, very slow company, didn't run a lot of calls, but I needed to control what I could control. And that was, like I mentioned, working out, just being physically ready, just learning the basics of the job since I was so new on the job. Like, we had a whole rookie packet of assignments that we had to do. So that was all stuff that I can control. Like, I can learn more about the county. And my officer was one of the, well, probably one of the smartest officers that I've ever worked with, because he really knew pumps and hydraulics very well, but he really knew how to learn your first due area very well. And he taught me this whole method of printing out blank maps of, like, whatever neighborhood is in the first due, and just filling them out until you know the streets. And I know everybody's got their own way of learning their area, but for me, that worked very well. And I took that with me all the way to Station 12 for my whole 7.5 years there. And I took that with me all the way through Station 28, my whole 9 years there. We did those blank map drills, and I think it helped the people that I was working with, but I know for sure it helped me be very confident in knowing my area, so that whenever I'm driving the fire truck or if ever I'm driving an ambulance, I knew where I was going. And as a driver, like, when you know when you're going, that takes so much stress off of everything that you have to do with and potentially dealing with the actual call. But if I know, hey, it's left here, right here, left here, and we're there, that's a ton of stress off. So that's controlling what you can control. And then at 12, again, just picking it up with physical fitness, working out, like, that is entirely within my control. There's no one is telling me to work out, but I knew I wanted to be physically fit, and so I got with the people who wanted to do that, and so I did that. And while I was there, I got to be part of the cadre at the academy of teaching the new recruits physical fitness, and just being able to pass the whole conviction of staying in shape, like from the beginning of their career. Like, again, controlling the things that I can control, teaching the up and comers the importance of fitness. I mean, all of that was within my control. And getting to Company 28 as a master firefighter and learning hazmat, that's all stuff that I can control. How much I want to be an asset on these hazmat calls, well, it depends on how much work I'm putting in to learn this hazmat stuff. And even though like I said, I didn't have any desire to do it, it's like, well, I'm here now. It's part of my responsibility, so I want to learn, and I want to be good. So, again, and we've touched on it just within these past few minutes, but if people can control what they can control, like it focuses you on the stuff that's important. It lets you filter out all the other nonsense, and it just, you have so much more control of your day and your life. And as a float lieutenant, I have a plan every day of how I think the day is going to go or how I would like it to go.
Right.
And sometimes that plan works and sometimes it doesn't. And if it doesn't work, and if it's because of stuff that was not in my control, then I let it go and I don't worry about it because we needed to do something else that day. And a lot of times I'll be assigned to work at one firehouse for the couple days that I'm off. And then the morning of my shift, it can change and I get moved to a different firehouse. And so whatever plan I had for that first firehouse, I mean, that's gone now. And so now I got to come up with a whole new plan. So, but if I spend all that time upset, like, oh, I got moved to this firehouse and oh, I can't do this, I can't do that. Well, then now I'm, what kind of example am I setting to the guys just walking in the door? So let me focus on the stuff I can control. Like, let's be ready to run the calls today. Let's try and get some PT in today. Let's try and do some type of drill today. Let's try and make a meal today and let's run the calls as they come. Because that's all we can control.
That's a fact. It's easier said than done. But the funny thing is, we all know, as we talk about controlling what we can control, I'm sure anyone listening, we all had that individuals we're picturing in our head that, well, it will ruin their day and they're just negative and it's rubbing off and you're just like, bro, like for real? Like it's okay, but I mean, I don't know. I think maybe it comes with maturity. Maybe some people are just that the way they are wired, like if things don't go as planned, it ruins them, but within the fire service, like I think you have to be adaptable. You know, if you're a company officer, if you're a floater and you're assigned to station 9, hey, sorry, you got to go to station 13 for the rest of the day. Like, okay, well, it is what it is. Hopefully you can maybe get those plans modified a little bit whenever you get there. But yeah, I just, there are some people that they act brand new. And it's like, like one of my pet peeves for me is I'm not an officer, so I rarely talk on the radio unless I have to. But most of the time, like, firefighters will only communicate to their officers if they need something. But what I don't like is when you have company officers roll up on something and they're excited and like you hear in their voice, they're yelling. And it's like, act like you've been here before. Like, take a breath, calm down. You didn't create the emergency. We are there to help mitigate it. Like, that's how I look at it. I didn't cause this house fire, but we got the call. Let's be cool, chill out, give calm, clear orders. Like, practice that. I listen to so many different things where, as leaders, like you don't want to see a firefighter running around the fire ground all over the place. It's like, whoa, especially with today's, everybody's doing this when you pull up. A camera's recording you. Chill out. Broadcastify. Oh, scanner radio, all that stuff. People will hear you. It's just like, chill out. Take a breath. Size up what you got. Act like you've been there before. And to me, it goes hand in hand with controlling what you can. I have a captain at my organization who states that he tries to control what he can within the four walls of his fire station. And that's awesome. Like, don't worry about what the chief's doing. Don't worry about this new whatever the case may be. Like, does it affect you? Or, your SOP, SOG might affect you, but does it affect you within that firehouse? No. So it's like, chill out.
We recently got a new fire chief, and prior to that, we all thought it was going to be this one other chief that worked for our organization, but it didn't end up being that chief. And there's a whole lot there that people who are listening to this, who are part of Montgomery County Fire Rescue, know exactly what I'm talking about. But there was a lot of drama on, okay, is this person going to be our chief or not? And I always thought, okay, well, if they're the chief, can they change some things? Sure. But by and large, are they going to affect how things are done within the four walls of the firehouse? No. You know, like people say, like, oh, morale is low. And like, all right, well, like, where is morale low? Because where I'm at, like, morale is not low because I am doing my best to be positive, to control what I can control, and enjoy what I can. And so I think a lot of times morale is just because our people have a negative perspective for whatever reason. And again, control what you can control. Don't worry about the stuff that you can't,
Exactly.
because you start doing that and you're gonna be messed up.
It's gonna mess up your day. It's gonna mess up your health. It's gonna it just trickles down. You will come home angry. You'll be mad easily at the world. You'll snap at your wife and kid, or vice versa, your husband. Like, just take a breath. And I've had to learn that because it would eat me up. I'd be like, well, why are we doing these stupid things and all this other stuff? And it's just like, all right, you know what? Just let me just chill out. Like, and it's funny you mentioned the whole morale thing. After my workout today, one of my quotes I wrote on the piece of paper is, morale does not find character. Like, it's truth. If you read the words, like, look at it, and you're just like, okay, make it correlate with your mind. Like, yeah, morale doesn't define character. That, granted, there are morale issues all over the fire service. I get it. But if you let one little thing affect how you're going to perform on the fire ground, what good is that? You know what I mean? Like, it just makes zero sense. So, like you said, and I'm sure people are probably tired of hearing those words combined, but it's true. Control what you can control. And move on. Keep moving forward. The rest will play out like it should.
Exactly right. Exactly right. So for my career, I have been a total white cloud. And you know, to my frustration at times, I have been to way more working fires driving a fire truck than I have going interior. And like, no one is more aware of that than me. And I'll be honest, I mean, that was a big source of anxiety for me when I first promoted, because I'm like, okay, well, how am I going to be when it's my time? And I realized, okay, well, I don't know when that fire is going to be. I don't know where it's going to be. I don't know what time of the day. I don't know anything about it. But just knowing the history of our department, it will come. And eventually it'll be my turn. And so what can I do to prepare myself up until then? And it's the basic things like, all right, can I get dressed quickly? Can I mask up quickly? Can I use these tools efficiently? Can I give a calm radio return, like what we talked about? Like, all that stuff is within my control. Like, I can control, I can practice that. Like, can I simulate the stress of being on scene of a working fire? Well, not really, but there are still things that I can do to control myself and to be ready. And when I started riding as the officer of truck companies, I realized that, wow, I don't have a ton of truck experience. Yes, I got checked off as a ladder truck driver years ago, but where I spent my time as a master firefighter for 9 years was an engine-only house. And so when I became an officer, now I'm the officer on a ladder truck, I'm like, wow, like my truck skills really aren't where I would like them to be. And so our department has a truck company operations class where it's just all truck stuff. It's ladders, forcible entry, search, VEIS, running saws, all that. And I signed up for that class, and another newly promoted officer signed up for that class, and we got to go through the class from the perspective of officers, but also working on basic truck company skills so that when we're riding with our crews and we need them to go do truck stuff, we know exactly what we're asking them to do because we've been doing it. And I was really grateful to take that class because it's just one more thing that where I can control what I can control. You know, I don't know what I may be called to do as the truck officer on whatever fire, but hey, if I'm at least confident with my truck skills and I know what truck companies like what trucks need to do, then that's one more step in me controlling what I can control and hopefully pushing this incident to be like to have a positive outcome.
Yeah. And I'll say it was behind the scenes when I did my interview with Jason. He talked about that. He talked about how you openly put yourself out there like, hey, I'm a newly promoted lieutenant. You know, a lot of people think that lieutenants and captains, they need to know everything because they're in that role. There are some things they need to know, yes, but they can't know everything. And how, and we talked about how, you know, he was really impressed how you took the class, you stepped up, you did your reps, you sometimes were the first to go, and you wanted to better yourself. That's what being a firefighter is. It's doesn't matter the rank that you're in, because at least for me, I know as humans, we can't know it all. You know, we all have certain skill sets, but when you have officers and firefighters that are willing to put themselves out there going, hey, I don't know it all, I'm raising my hand, I would like to learn. That sets the example for everything else. And you have some that don't want to do it because they're looked at as, well, if they don't know this, this person's weak, or why are they an officer? And it's like, we how the individual that's critiquing that other individual like that, do you know it all? Like, you know what I mean? I want to know, do you know it all in the fire service? You can't. We're a jack of all trades. We do everything. We go to everything. If they don't know who to send, fire department's always going. But at least the best thing about it is with all of our personalities and skill sets and different backgrounds, somebody's gonna know something. You know what I mean? Like, oh yeah, when I'm not working here, my trade is plumbing. So yeah, I know a little bit about this. I'm an electrician. Like, that's what it's all about. And I hate the fact that we all sometimes you have those negative individuals that are just like, oh, like you should know that. That's just dumb. Like, that doesn't help anything. It doesn't. And I think we're always going to have them, but I think the tide's turning where more firefighters are seeing that. And I think if you do have an individual that does that type of thing, they're easily going to get shut down because everybody else is going to look at you and be like, oh, okay, well, because you know, one good thing about fire service, there's always that firefighter that if somebody barks something back, they're quick with it, and their bark is even better. You know what I mean? So it's
Oh,
like,
yeah.
oh, I'll fire back at you. Why don't you go do this? And put you on the spot, and everybody's looking. And then that usually shuts that person up. So
Yep.
I love the fact that you did that. I mean, Jimmy, like I said, me and Jason talked about that behind the scenes, and it's awesome to see that individuals like you still exist. Guys that are like, hey, I'm gonna put myself out there. You know, I put myself out there all the time. Whenever someone asks me to do a podcast for them, you know, I tell people like I had a thing with heights. I still do. Still, I mean, I'm not cured of it, but like I just shut that notion down of not letting me do it anymore because, you know, like something bad's gonna happen. And the way my mind works is like, no, you know what you gotta do, just go do it. And then I just go do it, you know. But I'm very transparent about it. I'm not some macho guy. Like, there are things I'm still learning to do. I'm still getting out of my comfort zone, but I think if we as individuals can see that and apply it in our lives, man, it just makes things smoother.
100%, 100%. I mean, there's so much power in being vulnerable about where you're at, but also saying, yes, like I may be deficient in this, but this is what I'm doing to try to fix that. And I think when firefighters see that, at least the vast majority of them, I believe, if they see someone in that position, they will bend over backwards to help that person. Because like, okay, you may be weak here, but you're trying to work on it. Hey, that's all that you can do. Hey, what can I do to help you out?
Absolutely. 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 Like I said, man, baby steps, baby steps. I mean, you know, I got to the point where I was going up in the bucket and I was going up there and looking around. I mean, I'm not gonna lie to you. I'm still like, ugh, yeah.
Right,
But
right.
you know what? Hey, I'm up here. It's like, okay, still not my cup of tea, but I'm not gonna say no. I'm gonna do what I gotta do. As long as my mind's focused on a task, I'm good. You know what I'm saying? So
exactly.
But besides that, I always like to ask the guests before we end it, where would you like to see yourself before you hang it up within the fire service? What rank, what position?
So next year, I'll be eligible to take our captain's test. So I'm definitely going to do that. And just at least for me, where I'm at right now, like I would love to finish out as a captain somewhere, just getting to do all the things we talked about, help people grow in their career and be a good example and serve them and help them be to where they want to be. If God has some different plans for me and shows me a different path to take, well, I'll be open to that. But at least right now, that's what I can see myself finishing up as.
So you still want to ride the truck?
I do.
You don't want to be by yourself in the car.
No, man. No. Like I said, you know, that my whole career has been white cloud all over the place. And I just believe that, hey, if I keep showing up and riding these trucks, one of these days is going to be my turn. So
I agree with you, pal. I have no doubts. I have no doubts. So, but are you saying though, since you've been a company officer, you have yet to roll up first due on a working fire? Not yet?
So I have a couple times. It hasn't been, you know, big, huge fire blowing out of all these windows, but okay. I've been to a couple fires and, you know, I see them as the baby steps. Like we're working our way up there. And, you know, like, so I was working last night on the engine company and we got a medical call and literally not 1 minute after that, a box alarm gets put out for, the station that company boarded and we would have been due and it was a working fire. And I was like, again, it happened again. But you know, like I can't control that, Dan.
That's right.
I can't control
that's right.
That.
That's right.
All I can do is just show up ready. And whenever it's my turn, then it's my turn.
No, that's all you can do. Cause I can relate it to, we got two new firefighters on my truck. They are hungry. They are itching for that fire and it hasn't come yet and they're getting a little bit like, all right, like what's going on here? Like they've been teased. We've had really good teases. Last shift we had a shed fire. I tried to get them there first due, wasn't happening. We got there 1, 2, 3, 4th, and you know they just got to sit on the sidelines and just see the smoke and they see it convert to white smoke and then it was like, hey, ladder 6, you can clear. And I'm like, just It'll happen. And when it does, it won't be a little can job. Like it's going to be a good fire. So I love it. I love that the fact that I've heard it because it happens. You're going to a medical and then boom, a box comes in your area. You would have been first due, but you're stuck on this medical. It's the nature of the job.
Yep.
So, it happens for sure. But Russ, man, I really appreciate you coming on, accepting the invite, talking shop. This was great. Hopefully the listeners got a little bit of gems and nuggets and they can see like, okay, it's not just my department. Like these issues are everywhere. It's all about what you do when you got to face them. Like, are you going to let it deter you, get you off your track, you know, mess up your whole day or just roll with the punches and keep going. So I just want to say, I appreciate you coming on for talking shop, man.
Absolutely, bro. Thank you so much for having me. I'm a huge fan of your podcast. You're doing great work here, man. And please continue doing it. You're making a big impact in the fire service.
As I tell everybody, I will go until I have no one else to interview, unless until I'm out or people are just like, nope, I'm good, bro. So I know I've done my job, but thank you.
Awesome.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.